Hi, I'm Leslie Dolphin, and welcome to the latest Suffolk Money podcast supported by Kingsfleet. Now, as consumers, we're more keen than ever to know where our food comes from and precisely what's in it. And for one award-winning small business in Suffolk, traceability is at the heart of everything it does. The company's called Truly Traceable, producing handmade venison and game pies and sausage rolls. And it's run by Steve and Lynn Tricker from the garage of their home in Halesworth. My colleague Kevin Birch has been to meet them.
So here we are with Lynn and Steve Tricker, husband and wife team, always busy, as I found out this morning. This is where you run Truly Traceable, and I suppose the title of the business is really reflects the ethos you have, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, if we don't know what's going into the pies, we're not going to make them. That's how we started. We've had this surplus venison and we wanted to put that into pies, but there's so much interest in where food comes from, and it's so important, and we can provide that traceability.
So did you kind of see a gap in the market when everybody started saying, where does my food come from, that this was an opportunity to get into?
We weren't aiming for that because, like I say, the business started by accident, but we always wanted to know where our food came from, and we knew there was that interest out there, but that wasn't the main aim of the thing. It was to utilise that venison from Steve's Deer Management, but you know, we obviously hit on something, and that is a big part of the success.
And how proud are you of what you've done?
Extremely proud. And amazed on a daily basis, really, especially like when you get nominated, win awards, and people just that constant praise and interest in what we do.
For the listener, Lynn has a big smile on her face, and has. I think you're a smiley person, aren't you?
I am.
You are. Steve, for you, how proud are you, and have you been surprised how things have taken off?
Well, to be honest with you, like I said to you before we started, a lot of our success came around the horse meat scandal, and people wanting to know where your food came from. But yeah, it never ceases to amaze me from one day to the next, where you get people, Tony Singh, for instance, who else, Rachel Green, celebrity chefs are talking about us. Yeah, I mean, I was only a bulldozer driver, and you were only a cook in a local pub, and here we are nationwide, particularly in the game world, we're quite well known.
Fantastic. Well, you led me nicely into that. Just for the listener, give us an idea, Steve, what were you doing? Give a potted history of what you've done.
Left school, shall we say, under a bit of a cloud in 1982, 83. Started work the next day in construction, and I worked in construction for probably pushing on 18 years, I suppose, and then went into commercial pest control, servicing restaurants and things like that, which was okay. It earned us a living, and then I started to catch moles in large gardens, and from there people asked me to control muntjac. I've had a firearm certificate and shotgun certificate pretty much all my life. To be honest with you, there's only so much venison you can eat, so that started to get build up, and hence we started what we're doing now, and see if other people can enjoy it as well. So waste is something we're very passionate about, and the more of the carcass we can use, obviously in respect to the animal as well. But there again, there's certain parts that I can't bring the feet back, for instance, because the feet are the contact point between the ground and a hygienic atmosphere. So you can't, and also you have to inspect the feet for foot and mouth and various things like that. So the whole process, what you'd go through to get your meat into a supermarket, I have to do myself on the outside. You get, in abattoirs, you get vets and you get meat inspectors. I can't afford to take a vet with me. So I do courses and various different things so that I can identify problem animals and not let them get into the food chain. So everything has to be inspected. Everything that you'd get from a supermarket to go into your supermarket meat, I have to do as well. There's no cutting corners or anything. That's just how it is. So the waste nowadays, it costs so much to get rid of. So the less waste we have, the more I can sort of keep prices under control, if you know what I mean.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Lynn, what about you? What did you bring to the party?
Well, I've always worked in catering. I left school. I was always good at home economics, as they called it then, at school. Used to do a lot of cooking at home, as a child. I got the job of making the pastry when I was allowed to. Initially, I was only allowed to peel the apples for the apple pies. And when I was eventually allowed to make the pastry, it was discovered that I could make better pastry than everyone else. So that's how that started. I've always worked like from waitressing through to being in kitchen in pubs. No formal training, so I don't call myself a chef, just a home cook. And I was working at the White Hart in Halesworth when Steve had the bright idea to start this business that he said wouldn't take over. I was working there part time, and some friends of ours took on the deli in Halesworth, asked if I'd make sausage rolls because they knew my pastry, which were going to be Blyther free range pork sausage rolls, which I agreed to. Steve then said, well, how about a few venison products? We've got all this surplus venison that we can't eat. So we put it to them, and they said, yes, that'd be a great idea. They were very, very well received. And only 4 months into having the pies on sale and from the business being approved and started, we entered the British Pie Awards after hearing, it was Chris Evans in those days on the breakfast show talking about the British Pie Awards, and we just laughed and said, maybe we should just put our venison pie in. That's the only pie we were making at the time. Maybe we should pop that into the awards and see where we came. And, didn't expect to walk away with class champion. So that's when the business really kicked off, and I tried for 4 months to carry on doing both, doing split shift at the pub and then coming home and making pies. It was just crazy. It was crazy.
And just so tiring.
It was. It was really hard. But it was just that thing that there was all of a sudden there was this demand for these pies. People were hearing about it. It was covered in the local press that this little company had won this national award. And we thought, well, it's taking that leap of faith. You know, I've got my secure little job. Steve had got his part time mole catching, and he was working at the gunsmiths in Framlingham. And we think, what do we do here? Do we just try and keep a lid on it? And after 4 months, I couldn't do both, so I stepped away initially to do the pies, and then you gave up the moles, just shooting deer, kept on a couple of days at the gunsmiths, it went from there. So yeah, my skills are the kitchen skills.
Paperwork as well.
Paperwork, yeah. I'm in charge of the paperwork. There's a lot of paperwork. It's just the batch records and therefore the traceability. Everything has to be recorded in case of product recall. Fortunately, we've never had any problems where we've had to put out product recall, but that all has to be in place. Keeping records of all that. There's a lot involved. There is a lot involved. You've seen it a lot with some other businesses. You see that they think they've got this thing and they immediately spend a lot of money, get too big too fast, and it all goes badly wrong. I mean, we've grown organically. We've never had that desire to conquer the world. Sometimes it seems like we have, but it's just we do what we can manage. We're not scared of hard work. That's another big key factor. We don't outsource. We don't try and just get somebody else to do the work for us. We do as much as we can. That's all part of the thing of not wanting to get too big. If we'd moved into a unit, that's another overhead. You've then got a huge workforce, which you get problems with that as well. And we've kept it very manageable, I think, although it is exhausting. Where there are late nights, there are long days.
I went out of the house one morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, because deer are what they call crepuscular. They're most active at first light and last light, so get the sunrise, and I was shooting a lot down Sudbin Way. So I was travelling from Halesworth to Sudbin to get there about 3/4 hour before sunrise, and sunrise is about 4 o'clock in the morning, so I was up at 3, out the door, and then I shot 2 muntjac there, and then I came back, done all the butchering,
Not of those.
Not of those. No, of ones that we had hanging. I butchered all those and cooked all the because I do quite a bit of the cooking, don't I?
Yeah.
Cooked all the pie ingredients and then went out again in the evening and eventually came in store at 9 o'clock at night. So, from 3 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night, and I'm the wrong side of. I'm the wrong side of 50 now, so you kind of have to think if I was hourly paid, I'd be a rich man.
Yeah, absolutely, a lot of hard work. But also, I used the word humble. I'm sure you are humble too about your expertise, because you mentioned before about your past with pests, but also deer management. I mean, you're highly skilled in what you do.
It is a highly skilled job, but it's something that you can't actually, I mean, don't like to get political or anything like that, and I'm not going to. At the moment, the UK has a huge deer problem, but it's being managed by people in London with a spreadsheet. Saying you need to do this and you need to do that, and they're just out of college, PhDs in this, that and the other, but nobody is talking to the people like me. I'm working there day and night. I'm out and I can see it, and even in the last 5 years the deer population has gone extraordinarily out of control, to the tune, they say, of 2 million deer. I mean, we were at a meeting the other night. The CEO of the Forestry Commission was there, and at the moment we're culling 650,000 deer a year. We need to be culling another 650,000 on top of that just to keep the population where it is.
Wow, so it's as high as that.
So it's a big problem that's slowly bubbling under the surface that's eventually going to be enormous.
But why is that? Because you see the numbers. I'm sure landowners, farmers see the numbers and the damage.
Absolutely.
They do. So is it because we still see deer as cute, lovely, fluffy animals?
It's the Disneyfication of it. And we hear it all the time. Oh, I couldn't eat Bambi, so what are you having for Sunday lunch? Well, I'm eating lamb.
Hello?
Yes. And my usual response to that is, well, our venison is walking around, and there's a rifle, job done. Lambs are hauled God knows where, shoved into a lorry, carted halfway across the countryside, walked up a concrete passageway, have 415 volts shoved through them, and have the throats cut. The choice is yours, really. You know, we all like a lamb, and we all like a chicken, and we all like this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, if you eat meat, something has to die, and the way that animal dies and the way that's treated is a paramount importance to the quality that we put in. If there's anything out there that I shoot that I'm not in the slightest bit happy with, that doesn't go into our pies. If I'm not prepared to eat it, I don't expect you to eat it. Mm. So there again, when you talk about basic skill levels, there are no formal qualifications that you need to have to shoot deer. You just need to have the appropriate the firearm certificate, the appropriate condition on your certificate to enable you to shoot deer, and the correct caliber to shoot those deer. It's all laid down in law. That's all you need. Anything above that, your Deer Stalking Certificate 1, your Deer Stalking Certificate 2, your DMQ certificate, Deer Management Qualification Certificate, your Humane Dispatch, and everything else, is all stuff that I've done to make sure that what I do is correct. You have to have, for anybody to shoot deer, to sell it into the system, has to have what they call a trained hunter number. If you don't have a trained hunter number, you can still shoot deer and you can take it to the game dealer and they'll do the inspection for you. But you have to leave everything intact. So the qualifications I gained, I can do the inspection. I can do it all through, right through to the butchery. So I'm trained butcher as well.
You know, there's a lot of important things with the slow food movement and things like that. So not all things should be rushed. You know, you've got to do it right. There is a demand, but we always say to our customers, you know, you can only have it if we've got it. You can only have certain flavours when things are in season. You can't, you know, we can't make things when they're not there. And it's like with the rabbit pies as well. Yeah. We've got to Fantastic.
It's kind of going full circle, really. I mean, it used to be everything was convenience food and what have you. But now I think everybody's looking more at trying to eat seasonally. I don't want to eat asparagus at Christmas from Peru. Eat asparagus now, gorge yourself silly on it, and then wait another year. And then, and it's the same with game as well. The pheasants and the partridges are out of season. Well, yes, you can get frozen stuff, but I don't think people are necessarily thinking about pheasants and partridges now. Venison again, as people assume that venison is for stews and blah blah blah. But haunch and munch egg on the barbecue, venison burgers, fantastic.
Yeah. So it's no more wintry than eating beef, and people don't think anything of eating beef burgers and things like that, or a lasagna or something like that this time of year. Replace it with venison, and that's what we always say. It's healthier, it's lower in cholesterol, higher in protein. It's low food miles. That's right. And we also another big thing we noticed as well, we have got vegetarians that will eat our sausage rolls, believe.
You know, I was going to ask you that, because I a lot of us, and I'm the same, I'm not a vegetarian, but I quite like a vegetarian option as a change.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are in this kind of mixed economy, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I suppose you see quite a lot of that.
Like flexitarian thing, but the actual vegetarians, when we used to do Folk East, we had customers there that wouldn't go to any of the other meat stores, but they would eat venison sausage rolls from us. And it's a lot to do with there's no abattoir process. They know it's had a very ethical and not natural death, but it's stress-free.
Yeah, but you do find this is, I'm sure, a well-rehearsed argument for you when people say, oh, goodness me, don't know how you can eat deer. You have to just, I suppose, give them facts.
Yeah, and it's so satisfying getting people to try. I mean, we don't do many events now because we're so big. We've got the stock is the wholesale trade for us is so big. But we think it's important to still go out and be people facing to a certain extent. But with samples, you know, trying to get people to taste them. People love trying, but there was one particular time when there was a lady and she was quite, almost to the extent of being quite rude, that she knew she didn't like venison. She'd had a venison in Scotland and she didn't like it. It was strong and it was awful. And her friend stood there and said, well, I know, I'm going to buy venison pies, da, da, da. And she was buying. And I just talked to the lady and just said, are you sure that, you know, the venison here in Suffolk is very different, as Steve will tell you, from the diet, you know, what they're eating. They're not eating the heather and things like that. And she reluctantly tried a piece of venison sausage roll, and her face immediately changed, and she bought 6 venison pies from us after that.
Wow.
She was adamant. She was just knew up here that she didn't like it until she tried the venison from us.
And we have to be realistic. I mean, it's not for everyone.
No.
It never will
be,
and we have to respect that, don't we? But you're right. And Steve, one final thought on this. You've done it so many times, but when you're looking down your sights, I imagine the deer is an animal you admire, but you are ending its life. Do you ever have any emotional attachment to it or not?
I do, yeah. And it's becoming harder and harder as you get older. I can, my inspection starts when you say look down the sight and you see the deer. My inspection starts before the deer is actually, before I've even put the rifle up. You have to assess it and make sure and kind of make sure that it's behaving as a deer would. Obviously, if it has foamen at the mouth and walking around in circles, you have to assume there might be something wrong. So you'd shoot it and then do your inspection and try and discover what it is and whether we need to notify the divisional vet. But I can remember when you go back to an emotional attachment to it, I remember in a wood just down the road here, I stood by a tree and the chap up there, he actually detests muntjac. Muntjac are the devil. And I was in the wood and I said, 12 acre wood, so that's quite a big wood. And I had me back to the tree and the wind was sort of kind of sideways onto me. And it was only a small tree, like, I don't know, about a foot or so across the middle. And I was aware that there was something behind me. And the actual muntjac, big muntjac buck, he came, because they've got scent glands just below the eye, and he actually rubbed his head on the tree I was sitting on to scent mark it. And he walked off, and he would have made the perfect shot. But there's a time and a place for everything. I can remember being on a shoot once, and Lynn was with me, and a muntjac came out and got its head stuck in the sheep fencing. put his head through him because he's antlers, and he couldn't get it back. And there's this surreal picture of me wrestling this muntjac, trying to get him out of the fence, and walking past the line of guns with a muntjac under my arm. And somebody said, "I would have shot it." I said, "Yeah, there's a time and place for everything, and it's not his time." Yeah. And I let him go, and the passing thing was he battered me right in the face.
What you were going to say, and also you showed me your hand, yeah. Just for the listener, that's like a scar on your thumb,
yeah.
A V-shaped scar. What happened there?
Well, I shot a muntjac on one of the farms that I look after, and to all intents and purposes, he was dead. Once you shoot a deer, to check that it's actually dead, you do a blink test. So you touch the eye with your shooting sticks, and if there's a blink there, obviously it's still alive, and you deal with the situation as you're told, as you're taught to do. The blink test was nothing, so I got him out, and as I went to grab his leg and pull him, he came across and took a chunk out of my thumb. With the muntjac tusks.
It must have been adrenaline, wasn't it?
It must have been adrenaline, because to all intents and purposes, there was no life there.
No, and as we were saying earlier, the advice is always, if you see an injured deer, just leave it, because they can be dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely, they can be dangerous. They're fired up, they're full of adrenaline, antlers, or they can kick, they can do whatever. But muntjac, particularly, you need to be extraordinarily careful of, because they do have the razor-sharp tusks. As yeah. I found out at my expense.
Yeah, well, I feel we could chat all day, but sadly we don't have all day. But anyway, well, let's have a little look around and we'll talk a bit more about the business. You're listening to the Suffolk Money podcast, supported by King's Fleet, and I'm with Steve and Lynn Tricker. The one thing I haven't said, Lynn, is that we're actually in what was your old garage. And this is kind of where everything happens, isn't it? So it's small scale.
Yeah, it's small scale. We've always had a lot of respect for the fact that we are working from a semi-detached bungalow in Halesworth, and we've got neighbours. So it's very unassuming from the outside. You wouldn't realise we were doing this. Absolutely nothing to hide, but there's that respect of the chillers running. We've got internal chillers inside the garage. That's why we converted the garage rather than have a big outside refrigeration unit running, which wouldn't be very much fun for the neighbours.
Everything about you so far, isn't it, is, if I had to sort of sum it all up, is everything has been quite a cautious approach in the way you've done everything. Let's not bite off more than we can chew. So it's been very slow, organic growth. If this was Dragon's Den, they'd say to you, where's the scale? So where's the scale? Or do you want scale?
We don't want scale. That's never what we were about. We didn't set out to start a pie business with any ideas of conquering the world with venison pies. It was purely to make sure that the meat from Steve's deer management was being used out of respect for the animal, and because it is such a fantastic meat. So there's only so much we can cope with, so we don't need a huge premises. Steve's towards the end of the season shot a lot of deer. That's time consuming with the butchering side before you've even turned it into start cooking it and turning it into pies. So there's only so much we can manage. People love my pastry. You start scaling up, you're going to have to buy in ready rolled. And at the moment it's all handmade. That's a lot of the attraction. So to go into a big unit, you've got more overheads, more staff. So, that whole scaling up comes at a cost. And then you've then got to shoot that many more deer. So there'll be have to be other people involved in that. Or we then have to look at buying in deer, which was never what it was about. We want the traceability.
And you clearly wouldn't want to be bullied into a situation you take on a unit, which would be marvellous. You'd have the space, high-tech unit, lovely and clean. Have more space here to do what you do.
Yeah. Part of the car.
Part of the car, absolutely. But you don't really want to be forced into that.
You've got the problem of managing a workforce. You've spent time doing that. And all the paperwork and the admin that comes with being an employer, rather than doing what the passion was, which was making those pies, making those sausage rolls from ethical meat. That's what it was about for us. It wasn't about being the biggest and the best pie company. It was never about that. So,
but what about the supermarkets? Because I could see they would just love this product because it is different. Have there been approaches? Have you knocked them back?
No, we've never made ourselves. I mean, we could have gone down the East of England co-op route, but you've got a lot of... There is that pressure then that you've got to actually supply X amount when they put their order in. And if he hasn't shot something, it's not a guaranteed source of meat. He can go out a fortnight and not shoot anything.
I think the trouble is with supermarkets too, they're dictating the price to you, and I'm not having that. To be honest with you, that is what it is. I'm out at 3 o'clock in the morning. Lynn's here at 9 o'clock at night doing the paperwork. It all has to be paid for. You're not telling me how much I'm selling them for. That's the price. Take it or leave it.
So that's that fear, maybe, of just losing control a bit.
Yeah, I don't want to lose control. I can only shoot so many deer. I can only process so many deer. Like Lynn said, if we get other people in to shoot them, do I know they're doing it right? Not really. I have to assume they are. But if I do it myself, butcher it myself, I know exactly what's... I mean, at the moment, there's a big thing about lead bullets. Moving away from lead bullets. We've moved away from lead in petrol. We've moved away from lead water pipes. Now they're saying you're going to move away. I use copper. Do I know if anybody else does? I don't know. So to buy in, I've got that full control over what I do, and that goes from the venison, and that also goes to the market as well. We've quite often said to people, oh, well, yeah, can you shave a bit off? No, the price is the price. We buy half a pig, and I don't have a loins or anything. I don't have pork chops. Everything goes through the mincer, so you've got a top quality sausage meat
from one Blyber free range pig,
and we get Blyber free range pigs because they're stamped on the actual carcass from the abattoir. It's got Blyber free range on it, so you know it's Blyber free range, and we won't use anything else. All the other ingredients we use are completely local, so we've got that control over it. If you're going to start shaving prices, then I've got to speak to Giggler Cider, who's at Bramfield, who we use. I said, well, I've been shaved down on my price a bit. You know, can you just see what you can do? Or Adnams Beer. I can't see Adnams shaving anything off the price. Burra's Cream, just over the border. We've got Hill Farm Oils up there. You know, everything that we use is in here. And that's all at a price, what we have to pay. Why should I adjust my prices so you can have something?
No. And also, I guarantee all your prices are going up. Because everything has gone up.
We've managed to keep it at a certain level. I mean,
yeah
we're trying to hold it down. Ours is our biggest market is like going out wholesale. We've tried to hold it for as long as we can, but we have had to make increases. And it's not just the ingredients, it's the packaging, it was the energy. So that was a blessing that's come down a bit. But, you know, you can't...
Courier
fees to send out. You know, people say... Yeah, there's been people say, oh, gosh, you know, that's a lot... The fee for that's high for a small order. But, you know, how much... That courier's got to come here. You've got the fuel, you've got the time. It has to be on a premium service because you can't put it on a 48-hour service when it's frozen. Mm-hmm. We're using top-quality wool packaging, which again supports the sheep farmers to a certain extent. You're using, you know, British sheep's wool, which is the best insulation, ice packs. So yeah, there's all the cost involved in that, and we can't send them out cheaply. All we say is there are cheaper rates if the more they spend, which is the normal thing, but we can't do it any cheaper because we're not big enough to get a preferential rate from the couriers.
Yeah.
The more, you know, the bigger companies that use it, you know, sending out hundreds of parcels a day, they're going to get a better rate than we get. We don't send out many parcels apart from when Alan Titchmarsh happened to mention that our sausage roll was the best he'd ever eaten. And actually, our courier...
2 a week, roughly.
We couldn't keep up with it after that. It just went absolutely mad. It went out on Sunday morning. The website crashed. We were just getting constant emails of out-of-stock notifications. But the impact of that was massive.
It's the best and the worst thing that could have happened.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it was. I found that more stressful than it. That's probably one of the most stressful days on the Monday, trying to get all those orders out, because, like... You saw when you arrived, I was getting a courier order, and it's make sure you once you hit that button and confirm that booking for the courier, they can come any time between then and your cut off point, and it's like, trying to get all those parcels sealed up because I leave them open so that the cold air from the freezer can go in, because once you've sealed them, they're sealing the cold in, but they're also keeping the cold air out. So it's all very last minute when I package them.
That's another one, packed up, ready to go.
There you go.
In the 10 years we've been going, we haven't taken the wage out of this. So if anybody comes to me and says, you know, if your pies are cheaper, we'll take them on. And I say, well, do you want to work without a wage? Because that's...
People don't say it now, though.
No, they don't.
I think initially people thought they were expensive, but now other pies have come sort of increased in price.
Ours is a specific market, I think. Yeah. I mean, we're not aimed at the mass market, so we have got kind of an area which we're specific to, shall we say.
But you get a lot of people with children as well, where they want them to eat our products because there's no additives. And that's another thing that we felt very, very strongly about with making the pastry and with making the fillings. There's absolutely no additives. We don't use gravy powders. If you look on stock cubes, you've got E numbers, you've got preservatives and that type of thing. Because we make our products and they're frozen straight away, you don't need preservatives. That's the best preservative you've got. People are, and then cooking them from frozen. So that's another. It's so convenient for people with the. It's an ideal ready meal.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still reeling from the fact you said you'd never taken a wage out of the business, but no, I suppose
we
that
live
is...
from the business. And, you know, we.
I mean, meat is free.
Yeah, meat is free. Yeah. So that's the way we've just. Yeah, that's free. The way. I mean, that you've got that option. You can, but then I don't know if the accountant does that side of things. But it's. Yeah,
but this would be the story of so many small businesses, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That you can't afford that.
Yeah, we don't take a director's this, all right? We just. Actually, get on and do it, and we live out the business and
pretty much. But you take the hours that me and Lynn put in, and you convert that into an hourly wage, and that's next to nothing.
But each year we have progressively made more money each year in the 10 years of business. Yeah. So, you know, it's sustainable in that respect, and you know, we're making a living, and it's
The first 3 years was tough, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was really tough. You know, the budgets were... But various purchases that we've made have made our life easier. And we've not changed the pastry in any way. We've just worked more efficiently and used to our advantage certain tools what are available. So we are now beginning to see... To see the benefits of it,
but like I say, we've bought machinery, appliances, things like that. As we've grown, we didn't go out and take out loans or anything like that. Everything we've got we've paid for, so we haven't got any business loans that we have to cover each month.
Got about 7,000 quid worth of chillers there.
But as you say, it's yours.
Yeah,
that's exactly. The beauty.
Yeah. We didn't
try to run before we could walk. It is just that steady growth.
Yeah.
And it's nice now because now that we've bought everything really that we need, there's nothing really. I mean, it's odd things in here if something breaks or something like that. But generally, what we're making is ours.
Yeah, you have to keep level and you have to keep grounded. Otherwise, the whole thing could have run away with us.
Well, you are obviously doing something very successful and very right, because I just want to final stop, which I think was your daughter's bedroom, but it's now packed with
the
awards.
Office. So, yeah.
So can we just wander through and you can tell me about that?
Certainly. Okay, so this is the office. This used to be my daughter's bedroom, my youngest daughter's bedroom. And we found we've sort of run out of wall now. It's sort of...
You're telling me.
There seems to be a lot of award certificates and trophy cups. There's some deer heads from Steve's deer management, but as he said before, he doesn't shoot for the heads. He doesn't shoot for sport, for trophies. It is management.
Yeah.
But when they have got a nice set of antlers, it seems a shame for them just to go into Tradeway. So Yeah, there's a couple of those, but
you've got some trophies as well, and also
these are from the British Pie Awards.
British Pie Awards.
This is our most recent one. We're really proud. This is for the Eat Game Awards 2024. We went up to London, and we won the best game added value product, which means obviously adding value to game, because you can make it add the value, because just to sell a steak or to sell the meat, you're only getting that amount of money, but by turning it into pies, sausage rolls or scotch eggs and things like that, there's various items in the category. But we got shortlisted down to the final three, and we had to send our pies to Scotland to Tim Madden, who's ex-River Cottage chef, I believe. And he was very impressed. The comments were that he particularly liked the use of ingredients, the interesting ingredients, and the attention to detail with the ID on the top of the pies, because each pie's got a different ID.
Yes, I had a look on your site, and you can go, can't you, and see all the detail about the deer, where it was shot, when it was shot, which is really important. So. Yeah. And what do these awards mean when you win one like that? Does your heart flutter a bit?
It does. I mean, that was amazing, this one. When they first launched the awards in 2018, it was a new initiative to get people shine a light on eating game and to help promote businesses, to celebrate and reward businesses who are using game and encouraging people to eat game. In 2018, they launched the awards, and we won this category. They're at the very first awards in London. And to win it again this year, it's just like we didn't think we'd be back there again, winning it again, you know, much later on. But that's recognition for us as a business. Obviously, we set the pies off, but you had to get there on votes, your customers and the public nominating you, voting for you. You could only get to that final three on votes, and then out of the whole of the UK to have your pies awarded that.
Well, you should be really proud. I was going to ask you both if I came back in 5 years' time, where you'd be, but I think you've answered it. You'll still be
we want to be. We don't want to get bigger. You kind of think, oh, do we still enter the awards? We like to maybe just trickle an award through an Et Pie entry, but I don't like asking people to vote for us. So whether we would. Well, if you get nominated, you can't do anything about it. But I don't like that. I just don't like that thing where you have to keep asking, can you get enough votes of the whole social media thing? But you do it because you think, well, if somebody's taking the trouble, if people think we're worthy of that award by nominating us, you need to follow it up.
Just thinking, if you had any advice for a small business in 30 seconds, what would that be?
Do it properly. If you can't do it properly, don't bother.
That's less than 30 seconds, but that's brilliant.
Yeah. That's what I said to the environmental health officer when she came round, because we had we had a lot of hoops to jump through, because basically what happened was I thought you have what they call a hunter exemption certificate, which means I can supply somebody a steak. You can take that steak home and cook it, and that's no problem at all, because you're supplying the final consumer. So we're all geared up to go on the 1st of November 2014, and the Environmental Health says, well, the Food Standards Agency, actually, because we had to go Food Standards Agency in London, can't do that, because I'm supplying Lynn, and Lynn is supplying the final consumer. So believe it or not, we are a semi-detached in Halesworth. The Food Standards Agency have a blueprint of companies that they can look at and kind of say, well, you come into that category and you come into the category. There wasn't one for us. So they wanted to say that I was an abattoir and Lynn was a meat processing factory.
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah. Two separate
approvals. But Environmental Health, and I have to say this, were fantastic. Sharon Murray in particular was waving at the time.
Now, oh, he's suffering now, that's right,
this
yes.
is absolutely ludicrous, because we couldn't get a decision out of Food Standards Agency in London. It had to go to Cardiff, and they had to give us the decision. But Sharon Murray said, this is crazy. It's a husband and wife team. They shoot half a dozen deer a month and they want to make pies, I'll take on the responsibility. But we still had to be approved. We've still got an approval number, and we still have to keep this rigid traceability. Which, if you've got 5 minutes, I will show you.
592.
Goat 592. So 592 was a muntjac, was shot on the 10th of the 4th. Right, let's see if I can find it. Go back.
Wow, Steve on his little iPad is just looking through all the pictures.
That'll be this one here, 10th of the 4th. Yeah. 10th of the 4th, that was that one. 10th of the 4th, shot at Eugen. And that was exactly where it was shot.
Gosh, so it's brought up a satellite image with a picture of the of the deer. And as you say, then you've got the written record, which is everything, weight, where it is shot, what time.
All the details, and that was cull number 592. I made venison sausage rolls with those, and that was cull number 592. You see, it was shot here in Eugen, as it goes to the name, and mixed with some blobs of free range pork, and for the sausage meat, and everything else was.
I mean, that's traceability to a new level, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know anybody else who is doing it to this degree?
Not to that extent. I mean, there's obviously other. You've got other businesses where they're shooting deer, like Lavenham Butchers, and that they're shooting the deer and selling the meat in the shop and sending it out. But to the extent with the traceability and to go on the website, I don't think anybody else is doing that. Where you can actually go on, because that cull number that goes on the packages. We're passionate about the traceability, and it's nice to know that we can provide that for customers.
Well, Lynn, Steve, thank you so much. I mean, it's fascinating, doesn't quite do it justice, but huge praise for the success you've had so far, and long may it continue. Thank you for your time.
Welcome. Lovely talking to you.
Lynn and Steve Tricker from Truly Traceable in Halesworth, talking to Kevin Birch about their award-winning pies. And I guarantee you'll not find a simpler piece of advice about running a business than those wise words from Steve. Do it properly, and if you can't do it properly, don't bother. I can also vouch for Lynn's pastry. It's the best in the world. You can find out more about their pies by visiting their website at trulytraceable.com. Thanks to the team behind the podcast. That's Colin Lowe, Joy Day, and Sally and Kevin Birch. And until the next time, from me, Leslie Dolphin, bye.